The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
Ah, it's Friday. Oh, we're so happy it's Friday. Welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com and on YouTube and on Facebook Live, I believe, and I think even on Periscope. Hopefully some of the gremlins are gone, the gremlins that have been messing with us all week. There's still some issues. I think this new mixing board that I got has a short in it somewhere. I think I did something in a previous life where I pissed off the tech gods or something. And so in this life, they're out to get me. It's the only thing I can think of. Because things are not good, not as they should be. Anyway, we're here. We're on live. I see that. I'm checking in. Hi, Facebook. Let's look at YouTube. YouTube looks to be okay. The old Nicole Sandler Show chat room looks all right. So it's Friday, and it's Monday is Memorial Day, and a lot of people are understandably taking time off. But here's my thought: it's not like I can go to the beach. It's not like I can go out shopping or to a barbecue with a bunch of friends or anything. I'm going to be here. And as long as I'm going to be home, we may as well do a show, right? Hey, kids, let's put on a show. So we're here today, business as usual. I heard Tom Hartman was on a rerun, and I know he's going to be off Monday. I know Brad Friedman is unfortunately off today and Monday. Tune in is staticky. I'm sorry. I think that has to do with the short from this mixing board. I don't know what the issue is. Listen to the audio on YouTube. It's the best I can tell you. I know YouTube is sounding okay. And I'm trying to get to the bottom of it with the manufacturer of the board. If it's not one thing, it's another. It's always something, you know. So anyway, Brad asked me to fill in for them, for he and Desi today, but I want to get these technical issues figured out. So I will not be filling in for them today. But in addition to being here today, I'm going to be here on Monday. You know, I don't always do Monday shows, but last Monday we had so much fun doing a Music Monday program that we're going to do another one this coming Monday. Yes, it's Memorial Day, but since I guess we can all have sort of a virtual Memorial Day party, and I'm going to be joined for the musical portion of it by Dan Navarro. Now, you may not know his name, but you should. And you actually know at least one of his songs, because Dan Navarro he used to be teamed up with Eric Lowen, and they wrote songs and recorded and toured under the name Lowen and Navarro. And they wrote a song back in, God, I want to say the 70s or 80s, called We Belong, that was a huge hit for Pat Benatar. I happen to prefer the Lowen and Navarro version better, and now, I'll request it from Dan on Monday, so we'll get the Dan Navarro version. Unfortunately, Eric Lowen died from ALS some years ago, so Dan has been doing the solo thing. So he's going to join us on Monday. He's an old, old dear friend of mine who's made amazing music for decades, and he's been doing songs from the songs from the Corona Zone, I think he's calling it. And doing it like six nights a week, streaming live. So you can find him on Facebook if you're so adventurous, or just come on Monday and join us for a special Memorial Day musical Monday show. All right. I have no idea if this is going to work or not. Yesterday, I wanted to play this video for you, and I couldn't get it working. But I think today I have it. Do I have it? You know what? I can play it from here. We'll see if this works. All right. So yesterday, I threatened to play a Led Zeppelin parody song for you. And again, I couldn't get it working because the gremlins were messing with me. But today, I think we've got it. So fingers crossed. And let's see. There's a band. The band is called The Solution. And The Solution did this cover of a Led Zeppelin tune. Well, a parody of a Led Zeppelin tune. Let's listen to it and maybe laugh. Because that's the goal here, right? Right. All right. Take it away, The Solution. The band is called The Solution, and they do covers, and boy, they rocked out. So there you have it, rocking out. And I see some people in the chat room are like, well, not really my kind of music. It's Led Zeppelin. It's rock and roll. Now, I do have another song that I found last night that I think I'm going to wait until Monday to play. And it's the other end of the spectrum from this one. You know, look, some of us are old. I'm an old rock and roller. So, yeah, you know, that's my kind of music. Well, some of my kind of music. I like folk music, too. But, yeah, it was a great Led Zeppelin cover. I do have another. Should I play it? Or should I'm going to wait. Because there's something else I have to play for you that is just astounding. So, this morning, Joe Biden did an interview with Charlemagne the God. Now, Charlemagne the God is a New York radio personality, and they're mega popular. This show is usually at the top of the New York City ratings. And, you know, look, I worked in New York City morning radio for a few years, and thankfully my show was on the top of the ratings heap for a while. And, you know, look, I get it. Charlemagne the God, not my cup of tea. I'm obviously not in the demo, as they say. But, you know, I became acquainted with his show during the presidential primary because it seemed like it was a stop that every candidate made. And they had to bow to the, you know, the feet of Charlemagne the God, spelled T-H-A. Now, I know this is the old curmudgeony white woman in me. The Breakfast Club. Yes, that's the name of the program. And I don't understand why this guy is the arbiter of who black people should vote for. Then again, I'm wading into territory here that I probably shouldn't because I'm an old privileged white woman. But something happened on this show that really bothered me. And for once, it wasn't anything that Charlemagne did, because I heard his interviews with Kamala Harris, with Elizabeth Warren. Those two are the ones that you know come to mind when I think of it. And I was offended by both of them, by Charlemagne's questions for both Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren, and I was livid. That why is this guy who knows nothing, he's kind of ignorant when it comes to politics, why is he like the arbiter of who African Americans should vote for? But that said, again, I'm not a fan, not my thing. I'm not supposed to be a fan. I'm not in the demo. I'm a 60-year-old white woman, and the show is mostly for young African Americans. Or people who like hip hop and rap. And that's certainly not me, as you can tell from my musical choices. But anyway, what happened today is Joe Biden proved that he just is clueless. I mean, Clueless Joe is the perfect nickname for him. And I don't need the hate mail. Joe Biden, Donald Trump, no question. I will vote for Joe Biden to vote against Donald Trump. I would, and I'll say it again, I will vote for my dog Jackson over Donald Trump. Anybody would be better. But really, Joe Biden, so they get through the whole interview. The interview only runs a little over 18 minutes. I listened to the whole thing. At the 16-minute mark, when Biden's person already told him, no, Jill has an interview coming up. We need the studio space, you know, in their basement. When this happened, let me just play it rather than paraphrase what happened. So we're 16 minutes and 17 seconds into an 18 minute and 19 second interview. And this is what happened.
I want to ask you about your running mate. I don't know if you saw, well, I saw the day that a news report broke that, Amy Klobuchar was being vetted, and a lot of people on social media, they're not too happy about that. And it's because they want your running mate to be a black woman. I don't know if you saw the op-ed in the Washington Post by some of the leading black women voices in this country, and they feel since black women are such a loyal voting bloc, and black people saved your political life in the primaries this year, they have things they want from you, and one of them is a black woman running mate. What do you say to them?
What I say to them is that I'm not acknowledging anybody who is being considered, but I guarantee you there are multiple black women being considered.
Okay.
Multiple.
Okay.
Well, you know, thanks so much. That's really our time. I apologize.
You can't do that to Biden's black person. Media.
That's our time. I can't do that
to white media and black media because my wife has to go on at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions, but I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
It don't have nothing to do with Trump. It has to do with the fact I want something for my community. I would love to see
Take a look at my record, man. I extended the voting rights 25
years.
Oh,
my God. Okay, first of all, I got to pause it there. First of all, that wasn't even a question, and Joe Biden just comes out of nowhere with, if you can't figure out between me and Trump, then you're not black? Now, Charlemagne the God just jumped on the, this has nothing to do with Trump issue without dealing with the smear that Joe Biden just laid on him. I don't know if I backed it up far enough. Let's try this. Here we go.
Acknowledging anybody who's being considered, but I guarantee you there are multiple black women being considered.
Okay. Now.
Multiple.
Yes.
Well, you know, thanks so much. That's really our time. I apologize.
You can't do that to black media.
Okay, first of all, you can't do that to black media. Why is it black media or white media? It's media. And if they were given a time slot and saying you have him for 15 minutes from, 6 to 6:15, that's one thing. And the time was up. You don't wait till the very end to ask about his running mate. He should have done that earlier. That aside, though, I have a problem with this black-white thing. Don't we all? But my problem is the demand, and Charlemagne said it in this interview, we want a black woman to be the vice president. So, there hasn't been a woman in the executive branch in either the president or the white president's office or the white president, the vice president's office. Wow. But we did have a black man as president for 8 years. So that's good. How about we just go for a woman? I don't care if she's black, white, purple or green. How about a woman on the ticket? She's got to be black. See that? I hate identity politics, even saying we've got to have a woman. But it's time. So they're going through this, and then Joe Biden, out of the blue, out of nowhere, comes out with this bit of brilliance.
I can't do that to white media and black media because my wife has to go on at 6 o'clock.
It's coming.
Okay.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions, but I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black.
It don't have nothing to do with Trump.
If you have a problem figuring out if you're between me or Trump, then you ain't black? What kind of shit is that? Where does that come from? What an idiotic, totally stupid thing for anyone to say, let alone a man who's running for president. And then he goes on to talk about all the great things he's done for black people. Here,
it has to do with the fact I want something for my community. I would love to see
Take
you
a look at my record, man.
No, we've seen your record. You didn't extend the Voting Rights Act. The Senate did. You can't take credit for that.
5 years. I have a record that is second to none. Right. The NAACP has endorsed me every time I've run. Come on. Take a look at the record.
Come on, man.
All right, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Anyway, thanks. I will come back.
And that's the aide again, cutting off the interview. So I want to know, what do you think about this? Again, I'm a white woman. Maybe it's not my place to even comment on it. I'm offended. I'm offended on all fronts. I'm offended by the people who say it's got to be a black woman. And I'm offended by Joe Biden saying, if you can't, figure out between me or Donald Trump, then you're not black. What the hell is he talking about? It's all just so wrong. Every bit of it is wrong. So that happened. And for once, I'm not going after Trump, but I should, because, oh, my God, His idiocy was on full display. Shall we get to the news? We have a guest coming up today, by the way. Governor Don Siegelman will be here. Now, he was on with us last month, and we had a great conversation. And, I am so in awe of that man who was targeted by the Bush administration, by Karl Rove and his and Bush's henchmen. And he was prosecuted on trumped up bribery charges. He didn't bribe anyone, and prosecuted and spent a few years in a federal prison. He was a political prisoner. He was the only progressive Democratic governor that Alabama ever had. And he was persecuted by the Trump administration and was our most notable political prisoner. The thing I don't understand about Don Siegelman's situation is why Barack Obama never pardoned him. And that's a question we'll get into. I'm in the middle of his book now. So Don Siegelman has been writing this book called Stealing Our Democracy. And it's his story. And oh, my God, I'm up through the early years of his career. And being a progressive in Alabama, who's a Catholic with the name Siegelman, which is a very Jewish sounding name, obviously had an interesting upbringing. And he worked his way through politics. He held every office in the Alabama state executive branch and worked his way up to be governor, a progressive Democrat, governor of Alabama. And when he was running for re-election, basically, Karl Rove came after him. And the rest is history. And it's all in this book, which is available now for pre-order. It comes out June 17th, I believe. He'll be on that week when we'll go in depth into the story. And so we're waiting until the book is ready to be released to have him on for the longer show. He's going to come on today because he sent me a note and he's like, you know, I've run a lot of elections, and I know how to win, and I know how the Democrats can win. So I said, "Well, then come on back on, and let's do a segment on that." So Don Siegelman, of course, because I'm reading the book, I will have some questions about his story, but we're going to save the bulk of that for next month when the book is coming out. And today we're going to talk about what he thinks the Democrats need to do to win. And we all know we are in the midst of an insane election season. We're in the midst of just the most insane year that any of us have ever lived through. So, Don Siegelman is coming up in about 15 minutes. So let's get to some news, shall we, before it's time to get to Don Siegelman? Oh, boy.
We'll do it live.
Okay, Bill, go away.
Do it live. Yeah. I'll write it, and we'll do it live.
Thank you, Bill.
Fucking thing sucks.
God, he does this to me every time. All right, so Bill O'Reilly's gone. Breaking news, since I recorded What's News This Morning, a study of 96,000 hospitalized coronavirus patients on six continents found that those who received hydroxychloroquine had a significantly higher risk of death as compared to those who did not. The paper, obtained early by the Washington Post and published just this morning in the Lancet Medical Journal, found that people treated with hydroxychloroquine, or the closely related drug chloroquine, were also more likely to develop a type of irregular heart rhythm, or arrhythmia, that can lead to sudden cardiac death. Keep taking those pills, Donald. Just keep taking them. Go against your own FDA. Go against your own Centers for Disease Control. Go against your own medical experts and say, what have I got to lose? Your life. And we'd all win. So keep taking those drugs. I know your 2-week regimen is up tomorrow, allegedly. Keep taking them, Donald. It'll make you feel better. God.
That aside, there is some good news today from the Centers for Disease Control. They revised their guidance on how the virus is spread, clarifying that, quote, the virus spreads easily between people. And they stress that it's the droplets. As I'm speaking, obviously I'm spewing stuff out of my mouth. Now, they're small droplets, so they're not really visible. But I've seen some of the infrared photography, and the things that come out of our mouths, even when we're just talking, is kind of gross. And that's why they're saying you need to be 6 feet apart. So it spreads very easily between people. That's why they're saying everyone should wear a mask. By the way, my mask doesn't protect me from your particles. What my mask does is it protects you from my particles. So when you don't wear a mask, when you don't wear a mask, you're being really, really selfish. Really selfish. All right. I don't know who this is calling. Hi, who's this?
Oh, this is Don Fiddleman. I'm next up on the total show, and how do I connect through Skype?
Hey, Don.
Connect Skype.
Yeah, it's Nicole, and I'll call you. I will call you on Skype, and so you can just pick it up when I call.
All right, so you're going to – it will show up on my computer screen?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Cool. I'll talk to you in about 5 minutes. Okay, bye. He's so sweet. All right. So, yeah, we'll call Don Siegelman back in a few minutes. Anyway, so what I was saying, the CDC is now saying that – touching contaminated objects or surfaces does not appear to be a significant mode of transmission. The same is true for exposure to infected animals. One step up, two steps back. Then the other thing that Trump just said today is that he is opening the churches. I hate to assault your ears by bringing up audio of his voice, but so bear with me. He came out today. There was allegedly a briefing, and he made one short statement. I won't even play the whole thing for you, but to give you the gist of it, here's what he said.
Today, I'm identifying houses of worship, churches, synagogue,
mosques.
And mosques.
The word is mosques.
As essential places that provide essential services.
Oy.
Some governors have deemed liquor stores and abortion clinics as essential, but have left out churches and other houses of worship. It's not right. So I'm correcting this injustice and calling houses of worship essential.
All right, asshole. And he basically said, and I'm calling on all the governors to open those houses of worship because they're essential services. And if they don't do it, I'll override the governors. He can't. This man has no clue of what his powers are. He can't. So he said this. He talked for about 2 minutes. Then somebody, one of the reporters, as he was leaving, shouted out, "Are you going to church?" And of course, he didn't answer that because he doesn't go to church. He goes to church as often as I go to temple, which is never. So he did that. Because, hey, you know, cases are exploding all over the country, especially now that they're starting to loosen the stay-at-home regulations. And more people are going to get sick. And you know what Donald Trump said? If a second wave hits, this is what he said.
People say that's a very distinct possibility. It's standard. And we're going to put out the fires. We're not going to close the country. We're going to put out the fires. It could be, whether it's an ember or a flame, we're going to put it out. But we're not closing our country.
But we're not closing our country. So scientists tell us that historically, in a pandemic like this, and all we need to do is look back 100 years to the Spanish flu of 1918, or as Trump calls it, 1917, and see, the second wave was much deadlier than the original one. But Trump's, we're not doing it. You see, because Donald Trump thinks that the economy is more important than your life. Just in case you're wondering, the economy is more important than your life. What else? Let me see if there's anything else I need to... second wave won't shut down. Real quickly, other stuff. Georgia authorities yesterday arrested the guy who shot the video of the father and son killing Ahmaud Arbery. Did you see this? And I said it. I said it weeks ago. Why did this guy shoot the video? Why was he following them? There's something not right there. So this guy, his name is William Bryan. He was charged with felony murder and criminal attempt to commit false imprisonment. Good. So that happened. And if you're wondering about the politicization of our government, the Senate yesterday narrowly confirmed Congressman John Ratcliffe of Texas as the new director of national intelligence. The vote was 49-44, fell along party lines. But this was like the biggest do-over ever because Ratcliffe withdrew. He had been nominated before by Trump for director of national intelligence. But he came up against bipartisan opposition because of his lack of counterterrorism experience, his exaggerated immigration enforcement record, and his blatant support for right-wing conspiracy theories. But Donald Trump wanted him, and he lobbied the Republicans in the Senate to do his bidding, and they did. So in his second run at the job, every single Republican united behind his nomination. This should make you very afraid. He's the new director of national intelligence. We are so screwed. We are so screwed. And real quickly, before we get Don Siegelman on the line, let's see. Hopefully this will work. I'm going to try to just get him up here now. While I tell you, things are really bad in Hong Kong. As the former British colony, you know, where pro-democracy protests erupted last year, well, China said yesterday it was preparing to impose a new national security law. It's expected to ban sedition, secession, and subversion of the central government in Beijing and will be introduced in a way that effectively bypasses Hong Kong's legislature. For some reason, that's not connecting. All right. I'm going to try it from this computer. Yes, we're trying to get Don Siegelman. Oh, I can't do it from that computer because I don't have a camera on that one. All right, I'm going to try him one more time and see if this works. We're trying again. So in the meantime, the critics say that this is essentially the end of the one country, two systems concept that has kept Hong Kong politically autonomous from mainland China. This is horrible. And this is all playing out as against a backdrop of international tensions brought on by the coronavirus crisis, including recent promises from Donald Trump to punish China for its role in the pandemic. So, okay, so this is weird. It's not connecting for some reason. No answer. In a moment, I'm just going to call him on the phone. Anyway, so that all happened. It's just, you know, we're living an opposite world, and it's just screwed up. All right, let me try Don Siegelman one more time this way, and if this doesn't work, I'm just gonna call him on the telephone, on the regular phone. Okay, that's weird, huh? I don't know what happened there. All right, we're just gonna do an audio call with Don Siegelman. Because we're losing valuable time here. So let's see if this way works. I don't know if it will or not. This one's not my fault. For once, I'm doing okay. Let me tell you a little bit about Don Siegelman while we wait for him to pick up. Hopefully he will join us shortly. Don Siegelman was the governor of Alabama, a progressive. I think I'm just going to have to call his regular phone number. This is not right. Let me try. We'll do it this way. fourth time is the charm, as they say. All right. Hopefully this will work. So Don Siegelman was.
Hey, Nicole.
Yeah. Hi. I tried Skyping you, but it didn't work. So we could just do it over the phone.
Okay.
Okay, so we're live on the air, and I was just explaining to the listeners, you were on with me last month. We talked a little bit about the book that you have coming out next month, and we are going to reconvene next month on I think, the eve of the book release date to really go into your story. And I'm reading the book, and oh, my God, I mean, there's so much that I didn't even know about you, and I can't wait to go in-depth with you into your story, because what happened to you is a travesty. But the reason we're talking today is you said to me after we spoke last time, you know, I know how the Democrats can win. Because you have run in a number of elections in your lifetime, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I hope you can hear me clearly.
I hear you loud.
Terrible, terrible thunderstorm
oh.
here.
I hear you loud and clear. No worries.
Okay, good, because it's a little fuzzy on my end. But yes, I think I was on the ballot 17 times in Alabama. And I want your listeners to keep this in mind. I was elected to the National Board of Americans for Democratic Action in 1971 as a law student, along with Barney Frank and Kenneth Galbraith and a number of other noted left-wingers. I was active in the anti-war movement. I worked in Mississippi for the first African-American who ran for governor, Medgar Evers's brother, uh-huh. Charles Evers. Anyway, worked for Allard Lowenstein, a congressman from New York, worked in the Dump Johnson movement, worked for Robert Kennedy. Got a campaign contribution from my friend Jane Fonda when I was running for attorney general.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, the long and short of it is I should never really have been elected to anything in Alabama, considering Alabama's, you know, probably one of the most far right states. But my point is that if you connect with voters, they will overlook some things.
Right.
And in my case, they overlooked a lot of things because I was speaking to their interests. And my admonition and word to both Joe Biden and any Democrat who's running for office in 2020 is forget about Donald Trump.
Yep.
Everybody knows that what he's doing. Everybody knows he is stacking the government, and just recently the national security chief is, you know, going to be one of his clones. But you know, he's firing all of the inspector generals. He's taking total control. Everybody knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need to do is speak to the interests of working families. Working families do not go to bed at night worrying about Donald Trump. They're worrying about Nicole. They're worrying about their children and their parents. They're worrying about paying their bills. They want their kids to have a better life than they've had. So they know that starts with education. That's why we need our president, our nominee, to start speaking about universal early learning opportunities, free college education, retiring the student debt. He needs to, you know, to talk about what is important to the children of working families. He also needs to talk about their parents and grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
The working families want their parents to have a decent place to live, food on the table, and not worry about the cost of prescription drugs. You know, we live in the richest country in the world.
Mm-hmm.
No one should go to bed hungry, homeless, or without health care. Not the poor, not the mentally disabled or physically disabled or challenged, rather, and not those people behind bars. So how do, you know, as Democrats, we also want, you know, we want our kids to have the opportunity to have more and better jobs, higher minimum wage. We want new uses for renewable energy to begin to combat the climate crisis that we're facing. And a president, a person running for president or a person running for the state house, needs to talk about these issues.
Right.
I think, you know, you've talked on your program and other friends of mine, like Tom Hartman up north of you, has mm-hmm. spoken about, you know, we need a president whom we can respect, who is civil, who is couth, who respects the rights of women and understands history and understands the importance of a free press to our democracy.
Right.
And even Republican women in suburbs throughout this country don't want their kid to listen to a president who uses foul language, who abuses women, who doesn't respect women. And so we have that common ground. So let's let's begin to speak to that. And I think most people, most working families, also want a president and want people in public office who are for equal rights, who want social justice, racial justice, environmental justice, and in many cases want criminal justice reform.
Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, I was going to ask you. I mean, I'm hearing all the things you're saying, and I agree 100%. This year, we face, you know, unique challenges because it's hard to get out there and campaign. Nobody can right now. And so Joe Biden is relegated to his basement, and he's not very good at these televised or, you know, Zoomed interviews. And in fact, I don't know if you heard what happened this morning with a New York radio personality, Charlemagne the God. Did you hear about this?
No, I have not.
Well, Joe Biden was the guest. Charlemagne the God is the host of this radio show, The Breakfast Club. That is, it's one of the top rated shows in New York. It's, you know, and he made that the destination for every primary presidential candidate, all the Democrats, to come on and be vetted by Charlemagne the God. I thought some of his questions of some of the people were horrible as the primary season went on. But putting that aside, this morning he's talking to Joe Biden and they do like a 18-minute interview. And at the very end, I want to play for you what Joe Biden said. Hopefully you'll be able to hear it through the phone line, because I found it astounding. And I just don't understand where Biden's coming from. So tell me if you can hear this. No, you're not going to be able to hear it because you're on the same thing. Basically, what he said is, if you have to decide, if you can't figure out between me and Donald Trump who you're voting for, then you're not really black. He said this to a black.
What?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Listen, there's no there's no point in doing things like that. Again, you know, you don't win friends and you don't build bridges to independents and suburban Republican women, which is what honestly I think he is going to need to win this race.
Yep.
And you can't do that if you get, remember the story about the tar baby?
Yes.
I mean, you know, and if people always have the tendency to hit the tar baby, you know, to get stuck in this morass of politics when that's not what working people are thinking about.
Yep.
They're hurting. They want relief. They want somebody who's going to speak to their interests and somebody they can depend on to fight for them in Congress, in Washington. And you know, Biden has the capability of doing that if he would just remind people of where he came from and what he has been able to accomplish while he was in the Senate and also as vice president and working. You know, it may not be a bad idea for him to start trying to have meetings with some of the, you know, Republicans that he might be able to sway on some of these issues that impact the lives of working families now.
Right.
But, you know, it is frustrating to me as well to watch, because I had hoped that he would use this time, this last 2 months, to really relate to working families through both virtual, you know, town halls and rallies, but also maybe even, you know, travel. He could have hit the 50 states in the last 2 months without any problems. He's could have still made his phone calls to.
But where would he go? I mean, right now it's not like people are going out to events. I mean, if he could have gone to any state in the last month, and nobody would have come out to see him.
Yeah, I was thinking he could do that, and just if nothing else, you know, have a news conference in the hangar, you know, with the media separated.
But right.
Anything to get him on the air talking about the problems that face working families in America. And it's real simple. And you just, you know, you've got to do it.
Yep.
And it takes a lot of hard work, a lot of handshaking and endless speech making. But, you know, if you talk about the wrong subject,
he's so good at opening his mouth and inserting his foot. And it was the very end of the interview. There were uncomfortable moments, as there usually are with Joe Biden. I'm sorry, he's not the most eloquent speaker, but then again, neither is his opponent. He had made it through it, and then at the very end, he says something so reprehensibly stupid that I just don't understand what he's thinking. It drives me nuts, because right now everything is at stake here, Don. And this is who we're pinning our hopes on. So I'm pinning my hopes on his vice presidential pick. I had somebody email me the other day who said, so I figured it out. There's no way in hell that I can vote for Joe Biden, but I will vote for whoever the vice presidential pick is, right? And so that can make you feel good about, you know, filling in that bubble on the ballot. But that depends who it is. So we heard yesterday Amy Klobuchar floated that she's being vetted. You know, that came from her camp. We hear Kamala Harris is. Stacey Abrams is openly lobbying for the job. This is weird, because in past years, it's always been, you know, everyone denying that they're in the running or that they want it. They're all lobbying for it. Who do you think he should pick for the vice president? And do you think, as Charlemagne the God said, something that bothered me, that it has to be a black woman?
Yeah, I don't think it has to be an African American woman, and Joe has committed himself to a woman.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing, I think. It'd be nice to have a strong woman, but what the American people are going to be looking for in his choice is someone who can step in to be the leader of the most powerful country in the world.
Or what used to be and could be again.
But a wrong pick of somebody like a Dan Quayle or someone who is obviously not qualified to step into the shoes of being commander in chief then it will work to his disadvantage. So yes, he needs some help in vetting, the right candidate. I don't know who it should be. I've got my own thoughts. If I were in that situation, I think I know what I would do. But, choose carefully and wisely.
I think
it's also got to be somebody that can speak to the issues that I just spoke of. And, you know, of course, Elizabeth Warren was a great spokeswoman for, at least from my point of view. So he's got to make the right choice. There's got to be somebody who's qualified to be president. But it's also got to be somebody that's going to be tough enough to take on, you know, a tax reform and creating a fair tax system.
To deal with the aftermath of the biggest, not only financial crisis of our lifetimes, but the biggest health crisis of our lifetimes. We need somebody who's really good. And, you know, I'm seeing in the chat room, somebody, Tripp, who I really respect, said it has to be Val Demings or Kamala Harris. Well, because Tripp thinks it needs to be an African-American woman. I don't. Kamala Harris, I'm sorry, I don't think should be president for a number of reasons, not having to do with her experience. Val Demings is not experienced enough. She's not ready to be president. And with Joe Biden's advanced age,
I'm sorry, that has got to be a consideration.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling whoever the running mate is going to wind up being president. Just me. It's just a feeling I have. But those are things we need to think of. And Val Demings may be a perfectly nice woman, a decent congresswoman, if you like her, former cop. But it doesn't mean she's ready to be president. Same thing with Stacey Abrams. Very smart. But the highest office she's ever held is, I think, state legislator. I think she was head of the Georgia Assembly. But again, that doesn't make you ready to be president. Look what happened the last time we elected somebody who was not ready to be president. We're in the mess we're in now. So, you know, I like Elizabeth Warren, and I hate the fact that, you know, people that I like and respect are saying, oh, no, it's got to be a woman of color. Well, really?
Let me say this. John Lewis endorsed my book.
Mm-hmm. I saw that. Very nice.
I have worked. I had this bishop. Actually, I think he's out there now in California. It's T. Larry Kirkland of AME Zion Church, and I was in with him at a meeting of all of his preachers from around the Southeast, and he was looking at me in the audience, and he pointed me out, and he said, "You see this man? You see how he moves to the songs, and he has the beat and the rhythm." He said, "I think he's got some black blood in him," and he said, "I think Don Sigelman's going to be the closest thing we ever get to a black governor in the state of Alabama." Uh-huh. You don't. My point is, you don't have to be black to understand the problems and work for the people. You know, one of the reasons why I wrote this book is to protect the people who are most vulnerable. I was in prison with African-American young men who had no business being there. They were ripped away from their children and their family for piddly amounts of marijuana or cocaine. It makes no sense, and we've got to protect those folks. And you can speak to the issues that impact the lives of black and white Americans and win them over. But, you know, you don't have to have the color of your skin is not something that matters when you really reach down and speak to people and touch their hearts. So,
no, it's about your character. It's about what you believe in. And Don Siegelman, I got to tell you, again, the book, Stealing Our Democracy, will be out June 16th or 17th is the date. 16th. And you'll be back on with me actually on the 15th, on the eve of its publication, where we're really going to go in depth. But I got to tell you, one of the first stories in the book that grabbed me was as a young man, you grew up in Alabama. I love that your name is Siegelman and people thought you were Jewish because it is kind of a Jewish name and you're not. But that's something you had to deal with in Alabama.
My grandfather was.
But, right.
You know, anyway.
But you're Catholic. But then you tell the story of when you were a schoolboy and you came home one day and you used what we now refer to as the N-word. And your father gave you a lesson. Can you tell that story? Because this is what it's about. Not the color of your skin, but, you know, sorry to steal a line from Dr. King, but your character.
Yeah, well, so I had used the word around my mother, and my mother told my dad, by the time I got home from school, my dad was there, and which was highly unusual because he was a workaholic, and I picked up his traits. But so I said, "Dad, you're home early." And he said, "Yes, son." He said, "I heard you use a bad word today." I guess I knew what he was talking about. But anyway,
what year was this? This was like 1950-something?
Oh, early 50s, 56, right after Brown versus Board of Education, right when we started, you know, having to move around to accommodate, well, they were still trying to segregate schools, but anyway. So I used the N-word. Dad said, "I want you to go get the dictionary." So I went into our little bedroom, and we didn't have much of a selection of books, but, you know, one Zane Grey a novel and a group of encyclopedias my mother had bought from S&H Greenstash.
She used to get them at the grocery store. I do remember that.
Anyway.
Yep.
So I brought the dictionary in, put it on the kitchen table. He said, "Now I want you to find that word." And I fumbled around and looked, and I said, "Dad, I can't find it." He said, "Well, let me give you a hint. It's not in there. Try this word, Negro." And so he didn't say it in those terms. He politely said it. And I looked it up, and he said, "Now read me the definition." And I did. And he said, "That's the only word we're going to use. And I won't ever hear you use that other word again." And then he asked me if I wanted to work with one of his piano delivery men. He actually was the only guy, I believe. And that Saturday, and he wanted me. I said, "Sure." And so I was, the gentleman came by, African-American, strong young man, picked me up at the door in the truck with a piano in the back. And we went out to, I went out to watch him deliver this piano single-handedly up. It was an upright piano. Up some steps. And anyway, it was a lesson my dad was trying to teach me. It was something that, stayed with me for the rest of my life.
What a story, and that taught you a lesson. And you've, as a progressive white Democratic governor in Alabama, and this was back a while, you cared about the civil rights. You cared about the rights of all people. You worked for, some of the stories you tell in the book are incredible, and we'll save them for next time when you come on. But this is, I think, so much more important than, the color of who's ever skin. It's who the person is. But anyway,
I had a great time throughout my career as Secretary of State, expanding voting rights and tearing down the barriers that prevented African Americans from voting. And as Attorney General, I settled one lawsuit that forced all the cities and counties to redistrict on the basis of one person, one vote, which led to the election of literally thousands of African Americans in Alabama, more elected black officials than any other state in the country. And I was able to make those kinds of changes and fight for equal opportunities for education. And one of the things that I think that attracted John Lewis was the fact that to my cause was the fact that I believed and believe that every child in this country, regardless of where they're born or to whom, regardless of the color of their skin, the economic status, whether they're immigrants or citizens, every child should have the hope and dream of being able to reach their God-given potential through education. And that's why it comes back to providing universal pre-K for every child, with the promise of if you stay in school and stay out of trouble and make your grades, you can go on and get a higher education degree. You don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar, but if you want to gain jobs... job skills, the country will, we can pay for that. And of course it's going to take tax reform, and Biden, as Elizabeth Warren, need to talk about closing the gap. When you have 1% with 50% of the wealth, three families with 50% of the wealth, or 1% with 92%, and large corporations and billionaires not paying any taxes, when the working people are actually subsidizing the rich, we've been taught, and this is the image that some Republicans want to paint, is that working families are taking care of the poor, that working families are taking care of the people on welfare or people who are jobless. Well, it is the working families who are taking care of the rich.
Yep.
And we've got to close those loopholes. I took that on as governor to make enough money to fulfill a commitment to education in Alabama. Actually, when Arthur Anderson went in the tank, I hired their super auditors to go after the corporations that they were the ones that they were you know, cooking the books on, so they wouldn't have to pay taxes. Those right. that were doing business in Alabama, we closed those corporate loopholes and brought in enough money to fund education. But, you know, what I want to hear out of our candidates, from president on down to, you know, the state legislature, is to get away from talking about how much we don't like Donald Trump and talk about what we're going to do for
how
working families.
Yeah.
And I think if we do that, we can win a bunch of elections in 2020.
Well, I hope the Democratic Party will listen to you. Don Siegelman, again, the book Stealing Our Democracy is out on June 16th. We will talk about it in depth on the 15th, the day before. Don Siegelman, do pre-order the book. I'll put a link up on the blog at NicoleSandler.com where you can do that. Don Siegelman, it's always great to talk with you. Thank you. And reach out to some of the Democratic Party elders and make them listen to you.
All right. Thank you. I will make sure we don't have a thunderstorm next time we talk.
No worries.
I love you and appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Don. You have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next month. Okay. Bye bye. The wonderful Don Siegelman. He really is one of the really good guys. All right, and the book is just great. All right, we're done. We're late. So Monday. Be here Monday, Memorial Day, Music Monday. We're going to have fun, okay? All right. I'll see you then. Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay safe.